In the late 19th century, it's a pretty stark decline of Irish, but you have also a parallel thing going on, which is called the Gaelic Revival.
The Irish Revival, or the Gaelic Revival, is, again, a complex phenomenon. A student of mine did a PhD on Conran na Gaeilge. The Gaelic League started in 1893, and he studied it in Cork in 1894. A final chapter in that very excellent thesis, which was produced as a book by the publisher Cosh Lisse, looked at the revival as part of the general psychological response to the trauma of the famine. That psychological response taking the form of the embrace of religion as a solace, the development of nationalist or intense nationalist politics, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it may be that the revival of Irish met a psychological need. You also see that, by the way, in the rise of various sporting organisations.
Mm.
It's also a phenomenon too, by the way, of modernisation. The revival of Irish being facilitated by things like a postal service, a train service, allowing people to go to meetings like session and that type of thing. But I think the placing of this, the Gaelic revival, in the context of this psychological response to the aftermath of the famine is a valid thing to do.
Do you think that affected the Gaeltachts at all, or is that a completely different phenomenon?
People do discuss whether the revival had a positive impact or otherwise on the Gaeltachts, but probably without the Irish revival, the Gaeltacht would not have retained the identity it has today.
The Gaelic revival only takes off at a time when Irish has been very seriously weakened. It's very late in the day for the revival to take off, probably a couple of decades. I won't say too late, because it's a work in progress. And on a more optimistic note, when you consider how weak Irish was in the 1890s, it's remarkable not that Irish has declined so much from that position, but that how little it has declined. In other words, that the damage that was done to Irish in the 19th century was pretty serious before there was any elite recognition by any significant section of the nationalist elite that this is something worth keeping.
And in the early period, you do get a sense that the Gaelic League is something maybe more associated with intellectuals and the well-to-do in Dublin and other kind of metropolitan areas, rather than something of great relevance to ordinary people. But again, this does begin to change with the rise of cultural nationalism and the GAA and so on, and you do get a much more popular Gaelic League movement then emerging in the early 20th century. If you look at the rhetoric, they said they would join these organisations because of the importance of national identity and countering Anglicisation. So if you look at that at face value, people seem to be drawn to these organisations, you know, primarily because of maybe not nationalism, but nationality, ideas about national identity. If you maybe take a step back a little bit, as we historians do, you might look at the appeal of the organisations in terms of associationalism. That is, there's not an awful lot going on in many areas. There's not an awful lot to do. Social changes are taking place, particularly the growth of more educated people, young men in particular, who would be sort of looking for a place in the world. And while they're better educated, they would not necessarily have an awful lot better social and economic opportunities. So there is a school of thought that would see the attraction of the movements like the GAA and the Gaelic League as almost like an outlet for the social frustration of young people. So I think you'd probably look at a whole spectrum of motives, ranging from the ideological, the nationalistic ideas appeal to people, to much more kind of fundamental, you know, people just wanted something to do in their free time, to also maybe looking at some of the changes that are taking place in society and frustrations and so on that young, educated Catholic people might have in this particular period.
And as regards the language, how well did these young generation of activists actually speak the Irish language, do you think?
It's difficult to know, but some research has been done looking at the sales of the various textbooks that were used by the Gaelic League, and it suggests that, by and large, many people didn't master Irish as such. My sense of sort of looking at Gaelic League activities and examples where I have is that a lot of the activities seem to have been activities other than learning Irish. So a lot of the appeal might have been things like dances and ceilidhs and historical lectures and so on, all of which, of course, would make the Gaelic League and the Irish Ireland quite attractive to Republicans and separatists, because there seems to be an awful lot of them talking about the Irish past and Irish history and so on, rather than just learning language itself. Perhaps also one of the reasons Irish was quite a difficult language to learn comparatively, and also the project of learning Irish voluntarily, but living in a society that was increasingly English-speaking, you know, was just a very difficult thing to achieve. So I think if you look at the Gaelic League itself, its aspirations, I think, were more realistic. They wanted to stem the decline of Irish speaking, and they wanted to restore the place of Irish in the curriculum. So that's a much more kind of, I think, a realistic agenda, which they were quite successful in doing before and after the revolutionary period.
Well, it's fair to say that some people wanted to restore the actual language. For a lot of young people at the time, it was really a symbol. Is that fair to say, during the revolutionary years?
Yeah, I think so. I think there was probably a bit of, it was a kind of a badge of identity, a marker. I think it was probably more important to join the organisations and make a bit of an effort than actually to master the use of the language itself. Over time, maybe there was an element of cynicism, like,